But the older boy smoking this smelly old cigar came in the house. Chris announced to him that his mother and Chris had decided that no longer would the children be allowed to smoke in the house. The older boy stood there still puffing on his cigar, and he thought for a little while. He was quite a big fellow. Suddenly he turned around and he picked Brother Knutson up by the seat of the pants. Brother Knutson always liked to wear trousers with suspenders. And he took Brother Knutson by the suspenders and he picked him up and marched him out to the car. He had a Cadillac. And he set him down in the car and went around and got in on the driver's side. And he drove over to Mesa to one of the Knutson boys, Warren Knutson. And he went around and got Chris out of the car and he marched him into Warren's house. And he says, "Here's your old man. Keep him home and keep him out of trouble." So that dissolved this new marriage that Chris had started with the Roger girl. So for the second time, that romance was busted up. Chris died not long after that, so that ends the story for Chris as far as this is concerned. As long as I can remember, the kids pestered poor old brother and Sister Knutson. Now, Sister Knutson was a normal person, but Chris had his strange habits. When he joined the church, he joined really 100%. He was very honest and faithful about it. He had his queer habits, but he was honest and faithful. We teach about prayer, and he really believed in prayer. It's said that when Chris's children were small, that when Chris started to praying, that he repeated the same thing so often that the children would go out and have a game of marbles while he was praying. And when he got to a certain place, well, one of the boys who was sitting by the door and listening would say, "Well, Dad, bless so-and-so." He said, "You better come in." And so when Brother Chris would get through praying and open his eyes, well, all the kids were lined up around the table. And he apparently didn't realize that anything was going on. This was his own family when the kids were young. Now, most of the kids were raised or grown and married when I came along. And Clifford said he went up and played one or two jokes on the old folks. He said that the old folks had a dog that they dearly loved, a pet dog. And he said he and Joseph Nielsen went up one day and caught the old dog and turpentined him. And this makes the dog's behind itch tremendously. He does everything he possibly can to scratch the burning behind. And the old dog, after he'd been turpentined, he run in the house where Susie and Chris was because he wanted to be comforted by Susie and Chris. And he went over to them a-howling and a-yipping, and he'd scoot around on the kitchen floor. And Chris and Susie decided the old dog had the rabies. And so they locked him in the bedroom, and after a couple of hours, the dogs behind quit hurting, and he shut up, and Susie and Chris decided that the kids had played a trick on him. Their youngest boy, Marley Knutson, played tricks on him. It was cold one winter. In Blue Water, we used wood stoves, and every room had a stove in it. It was a common practice of Brother and Sister Knutson to come home from whatever meeting or wherever they'd been, and they'd go in the kitchen. They'd shut all the doors to the bedrooms or any place else and just have the door to the kitchen open. And they'd start a fire in the kitchen there, and they'd get it warm real quick. That was the easiest room to get warm, and then they'd open the doors to the other parts of the house. And if it was real cold, they'd build a fire in the bedroom or wherever they might be going to be. But old Marley, he went to Sunday school with them that morning, and then he crawled out one of the side windows at the beginning of classwork. He run home. And he disconnected, he climbed up in the attic of the Knutson home and disconnected the stove pipes that went through the attic, and he took the stove pipe from the kitchen stove and run it over and run it down the pipe in the bedroom. Then he left the doors to the bedroom stove wide open. After Sunday school, Marley was back at church, and he and some kids got together and he told the old folks that he'd be home later for dinner. They walked on up the two blocks to their house and closed the bedroom door, and they lit a match to the kindling that they had in the kitchen stove. They always had it fixed so they could just light a match and the kindling in the stove would start burning. And because of the winds that we have in Blue Water sometimes, if there's not a hot draft going up the chimney, well, the wind will blow the smoke right back down the chimney and out the stove. And this was quite a common happening to Brother and Sister Knutson, so they had a big old stiff piece of cardboard that they'd fan the kitchen stove with and make this draft blow the smoke up the chimney. And on this particular day, Chris was rather surprised because he hadn't noticed the wind blowing outside, but anyway, the old kitchen stove didn't draw very good, and he stood there and he fanned and fanned, and Susie would add a little piece of cedar wood here and a little piece there, and they got a good fire going, and Chris stood there and fanned, trying to get the draft going up the chimney. Mm-hmm. And fairly quick, Susie decided that she wanted to take off her Sunday clothes, and so she opened the door to the bedroom, and by golly, the smoke just rolled out of the bedroom, and she yelled, "Fire, fire, Chris, it's on fire in the bedroom." And they run in, and then they found out that the chimney up in the attic had been changed. So this is the way that Marty had treated his parents. When Raymond come along, they pestered him quite a bit. There was Glenn Chapman and Alan Nielsen and Raymond and two or three other kids that they run around with each other all the time and had a great time. And they went up and teased Brother and Sister Knutson quite a bit. But Sister Nielsen, Deborah Nielsen, was raising their daughter Elizabeth to be a perfect young lady. And Deborah would not let Elizabeth go up with the young people up to tease Brother Knutson. Now, Emmeline Chapman and the Elgin George and the rest went with the boys up and pestered the old folks, but Elizabeth was not allowed to go along, and she begged and begged her mother to let her go along with the group. And she said, "Well, Mother, you let Alan go," and Mother would say, "Well, Alan's older, and besides, he's a boy, and you're to be a perfect young lady." And finally the day came when Sister Nielsen told Elizabeth that she could go with the group up to tease the old folks. So that evening after, this is when they'd been up in the canyon and had a picnic, on a Sunday afternoon they stopped by the old folks' house. And on this particular night, well, the teasing that they did, Chris always had some dogs or cats in the house with him. He had, at the time Clifford was there, they had this big old pet dog, a big old hound dog. And during Raymond's time, the dogs were a little bit smaller, but he had two cats and three dogs that he kept in the house. And so what the kids did to tease him, they would wait till the old folks were ready to go to bed or something, and then they'd meow like a cat, or they'd make some other noise, and the dogs inside would yip and bow, wow, 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 and then Chris and Susie would have a heck of a time getting them shut up so that they could go to sleep. And then about the time they got to sleep, well, then outside it'd be another cat or a dog or something else would make noise, and the dogs inside start yipping again. And later on, Elizabeth told her mother that was the most fun she'd ever had. They just had the most fun that night. And Deborah Nielsen came down and told my mother, she said, "You know, Elizabeth enjoyed that little trick more than anything else she's ever done." And she said, "You know, really, they didn't hurt the old people. They just made the dogs bark." So Sister Nielsen was kind of straddle line. She wanted Elizabeth to be a perfect lady, and yet she couldn't see where they was really doing any harm to the old folks. Anyway, I had told you about Chris and his prayers, and Lawrence Child, Elvin Child, built a house up on the edge of the hill fairly close to Brother Knutson's place. And Lawrence Child found out that Brother Knutson went back up in the hills in a certain place almost daily for his noon prayer. And old Lawrence used to follow old Chris up there, and then he'd listen and kind of giggle about it, and he'd come down and tell the rest of us. And on this particular day, when Junior Titchen, Lawrence followed Chris up in the hills to hear Chris give his noonday prayer. And I guess they giggled a little bit too loud, but Chris heard them. And he chased them down the hill by throwing rocks and sticks at them. And of course, the boys enjoyed that 100%. As a younger kid, I used to trail about 20 or 30 feet behind Chris, and I'd put my fingers in my ears and say, yeah, 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 at him. Of course, there'd be three or four other boys with me, and we'd yeah, yeah, at him, about 8 or 10 year old kids. Chris would reach down, pick up some rocks off the road and throw at us. And we'd dodge the rocks and we'd just giggle about that. And then Chris would start walking to church and we'd go up and yeah, yeah him some more. Yeah, I guess it's just lucky that Brother Knutson only had 2 blocks to walk to church, because if it'd been any longer than that, I don't know what had happened. Later on, years later, when I got to be a deacon and we were passing sacrament, and it was rather cold one day, the sacrament table was right beside the door that we came in, the entrance door. And we only had 3 of us to pass the sacrament and 2 priests to bless the sacrament, so nobody was watching the door on this one particular cold day. And all at once, we had already passed the bread and was getting ready to bless the water, and the door broke open, and in comes Susie and Chris, and they shut the door. Of course, we held up on the sacrament. And Chris says, them dang little fools, blankety blankum. He said, they throw snowballs at us and they just tease us. He says, I hope they go to blankety blank blank hell. And he would just jawn as hard as he could while he and Susie were taking their coats and things off and hanging them on the hook beside the door. And then he turned around and suddenly realized he was in the middle of the sacrament. He came in and he and Susie quietly took a seat, and we blessed the water, and then we passed the water. And that was that little episode. Chris always thought he was rather hard of hearing. We'd have conference there. And for our regular Sunday school meeting, just the town people would turn out. But when we had conference, everybody from 20 miles around that was a Mormon or Jack Mormon or even heard of the Mormon seemed to turn out, because they wanted to hear the speaker. And it would be kind of packed on those particular days. And Chris would come in a little bit late, and he'd try to get a seat just as far up on the front as he could so he could hear. He'd squeeze in between 2 or 3 of the people. In fact, the people knew that he'd squeeze in, so somebody'd get up and move over and walk back to the back or get somewhere else and get a seat. Chris would sit up close to the front as he could. And he'd cup his hand over his ear so that he could hear what the speaker was saying. And if the speaker didn't talk quite loud enough, well, Chris would stand up and say, louder, brother, louder. I can't hear what you're saying. And then, of course, us kids sitting in the back, we just giggle and tee-hee about that. Chris also had another habit that we got quite a kick out of. The old church house had wood floors with boards that had dried, and when they put the boards in, I guess they were wet, and when they dried out, they had quarter inch cracks or maybe a half inch crack between the boards, and the knots had fell out, leaving holes. And Chris had a habit of hockey pooing. He'd spit right on the floor and try to hit one of these holes. And somebody announced to Brother Knutson that that was very unhealthy, that there was germs in his spit, and he shouldn't do that anymore, that the spit was full of germs. So a short time later, while we were sitting in church, and Chris went, and he spit right in the middle of the aisle, and then he got up, and he stomped on his spit with his shoes, and he finally got through stomping around on it, and then he sat back down announcing the fact that he had stomped all of the germs to death. It wouldn't bother us anymore. When I was a young fellow, just about the age that I got interested in dancing, the ward finally decided that they'd have to buy a phonograph or something that we could dance to, because getting a fiddle and a guitar and everything, for some strange reason, we decided that Chris and his concertina wasn't good enough for us to dance by. We wanted better. And so they had a fellow from Rhema come over and play a fiddle with Chris once in a while. But Rhema was quite a ways away. It took a day to ride over by horseback or a day to get back to Rhema. So The old gentleman that come over and played his fiddle didn't come over very often. We got a great kick out of him playing the fiddle. If we heard he was gonna play for the dancehall, everybody turned out, especially the young kids, because he fiddled so hard and he had galluses on that the galluses would slip over his shoulder and then his pants start falling off. And we considered that quite a sight for him to be playing for the Virginia Reel or something and his pants start falling down and he'd reach down with his hand and pull his pants back up while he was still fiddling, and then he'd have to reach down and pull them back up again. And we got the biggest kick out of that, along with Brother Chris and his old whiskers a bobbing up and down. That was a real entertainment for the ward. And we had a great time at these dances. Anyway, we tried using an old Victrola, the wind-up type. We carried the one from our house over there, and it being a rather big machine, it was a rather hard job. And it didn't make too much noise or didn't play very loud. If the kids got to doing a Virginia Reel or something like that, we couldn't hear the music. You know, as far as a waltz was concerned, then the old Victrola was loud enough, but on a Virginia Reel, it wasn't loud enough. So finally the ward decided that they'd have to get an electric one that was loud enough for us to dance by. And so one afternoon, well, here come a phonograph with an amplifier, electric amplifier, that you hook to a car battery. And old Junior Titchen and I and Glenn Chapman got a hold of it. And Leslie Jarge was in on the group. But as near as I can remember, Glenn Chapman got a sheet and stuck over his head, and he took the speaker, which had a long wire attached to it, and he stuck the speaker underneath the sheet right in front of his stomach. And then old Leslie Jarge and the rest of us set out in the car, which was over to the side of the house, a little bit back to the back. And we had the microphone in our hands. And Glenn walked up to Brother and Sister Knutson's front door, and he knocked on the door. And when the door opened, well, in the car, well, Leslie Jarge said, "I'm the angel Gabriel." And he said, "The books of heaven have been opened, and we have found your name listed among the names on this book in heaven." And Brother Knutson, having been quite a faithful fellow and had prayed quite a bit, he was sure that his name was really on that book. And so Glenn tells us that he kneeled down in front of him and said, "Amen, praise the Lord, amen," and was kneeling right in front of him. And about that time, a little Leslie started giggling. And then Brother Knutson decided that we had played a trick on him. And he reached over and he grabbed a broom and chased old Glenn out across the fields, and Glenn dropped the speaker and he lost his sheet, scattered everything around. We had quite a time getting everything put back together again, but it was quite an event to be remembered. We used that old amplifier for years after that. We danced many a dance to that old amplifier. Chris, I guess, was quite jealous of the amplifier for two reasons: that we'd played that trick on him, and because we didn't ask him only on special occasions to play his concertina after that. As boys, my dad raised quite a lot of ruckus because we kept teasing the old folks. He kept telling us not to go up and bother him anymore. In fact, one night, when Chris was going home from a dance, some of us boys got behind Brother Knutson, and I don't recall just what we would do to pester the old man, whether we stepped on his heels or whether we slipped rocks in his pockets or just what we did, but the old man would wait until we got pretty close, and then he'd whirl and try to hit us. And this got to be quite a stunt with us. Some of the boys got hit pretty hard. I never did get quite brave enough to get that close, so I never did get whacked, but this one night it was darker than the dickens. And all at once I was in the back, and somebody just kicked my old hind end something terrible. And then he kicked me again, and it was my dad. "Get on home," he says. So old Junior Titchen and we run to my house, and we hid behind a couple of trees until my dad cooled off enough to where we dared separate. And I went in the house, and Junior Titchen went home. Then my dad talked to me about playing tricks on Brother Knutson like that. Now, I suppose the other boys were just as much persuaded that they shouldn't play tricks on the old folks anymore. And we burned wood in the stoves And so as a neurotic priesthood group, we decided we'd be good to the old folks. So one night, just after dark, one Saturday evening, well, all of us got our axes and we marched up to Brother Knutson's. And we got out on his wood pile and we started chopping wood. Chop, chop, chop. There's about seven or eight of us out there, and we was really chopping wood. Brother Knutson, hearing all this commotion, he decided somebody else was playing another trick on us, on him. So he came out. I don't know whether he had a gun this night. It was rumored he had a shotgun. He was going to shoot some of us one of these days. But he had a broom or a shotgun in his hand, and he came a-roaring out of the door, and us kids, we took our axes, and we really took off. So we didn't chop very much wood that night, but we really enjoyed being chased by Brother Knutson with his old shotgun. After that, we chopped wood every Saturday afternoon in the middle of the day for Brother Knutson. We no longer went after dark. We chopped it in the middle of the day. And there was always one of our fathers who went along with us to see that we did chop the wood for the old folks. No, he didn't chase us away in the middle of the day. It seemed like he was happy that we'd came to help him. In the early days of Blue Water, instead of having law officials, such as a policeman and sheriff like that, the church had what they called a bishop's court. If something was going on that wasn't necessarily approved of by the people, and they held a bishop's court and decided what to do about it. And this still took place when I was a young boy. The only time that I was in front of the bishop's court, along with all the rest of the Aaronic priesthood in our branch, was when I was about 13 years old. But the only place we had to play basketball was in the hall of the church. And so it was worked out so that the boys could play basketball on Monday night. Tuesday night was mutual, but after mutual was over with, we got to play for 1 hour. The boys could play basketball for 1 hour. Then the girls played Wednesday night, then the boys played Thursday night, then the girls could play Friday night, then Saturday night was a dance. So the boys got 2 nights and 1 hour to play basketball, and the girls got 2 nights to play basketball. But the girls were jealous of us. They didn't like the idea that we got to play 2 nights and 1 hour, and they only got to play 2 nights. And I don't recall just what we boys did to kind of get the bishopric mad at us. So it was decided in the council that the girls would be allowed to have one of our nights to play basketball. So we only got to play basketball on Monday night and 1 hour on Tuesday, and the girls got it Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And we didn't like that, so we did everything to disrupt the basketball games that the girls had as much as we possibly could. And the electric lights for the hall was furnished by an old Kohler electric plant that was out back of the church. And a man by the name of Goodman, Charlie Goodman, was the guy that took care of the light plant. He would start the light plant each night, let it run until time for the girls to go home, and then he'd go out and he'd slow the light plant down, and he'd make the lights go dim, and then he'd brighten them up. 5 minutes later, he'd make it go dim again, and then he'd brighten it up, and if the girls weren't through playing by that time and got their clothes, well, he'd turn the light plant off, and everybody had to get out of the hall when it's dark. Well, so us boys, we'd go over there about the middle of their practice. We'd slow the light plant down and then speed it up and then slow it down, and then we'd shut it off. Then the girls would think it was time to go home. When they got home, they found out it was still early in the evening, and Charlie Goodman had come along later to turn the plant off, and everything was turned off. Now everybody had gone home. It only took the church bishop and his counselors a week to figure out who was turning the light plant off. So they put a padlock on the door of the light plant so that we couldn't get in. We then discovered that we could put a potato up the exhaust pipe of the light plant, and that'd slow it down so the lights were very dim. So then the bishopric decided they'd put a guard on the light plant. Basically, the one man that guarded the light plant was Charlie Goodwin, because he was the one that was in charge of it. And there'd be a person in the hall watching the girls, guarding them, and Charlie'd be out guarding the light plant. And it was kind of cold, and so Charlie would walk around the outside of the light plant for a couple of rounds or something like that, and real cold, nobody around, so he'd go inside the light plant and shut the door. And he'd keep warm this way. And one night, us boys, we went over and we locked the padlock and locked Charlie Goodwin in the lighthouse so he couldn't get out. He started the light, or he stopped the light plant, and then he started it, and then he stopped it, and then he started it. After doing this four or five times, the member of the priesthood that was in watching the girls practice decided something was really wrong, so he went outside and found out that Charlie was locked in the light plant. Charlie passed the keys to the padlock out through a little hole in the wall, and they unlocked the padlock, and Charlie got out. Well, this also had several of our parents in the air, and my dad cautioned me about not locking Charlie Goodwin in the light plant anymore, because if the light plant caught on fire, Charlie would burn up. So we never did lock Charlie Goodwin in the light plant anymore, and we had to find some other way to do it. So this one particular night, us boys were outside. By the way, by that time, they'd taken all of our basketball privileges away from us. And the girls were still playing just three nights a week, but they didn't even open the church house up on Monday night. And Tuesday, after mutuals were over with, they wouldn't let us play basketball. So we'd go over and we'd climb on top of a box or barrel, anything else, and get up and look in the windows of the hall and see how the girls was doing. And the guy that was guarding the girls, he'd come out and he'd run us all away. And then as soon as he'd go back in, we'd climb up, look through the windows. And when we'd look through the windows, it wasn't just enough looking through. We had to stick our tongue out at the girl. And finally, they absolutely demanded that we, or requested that we not look in the windows and make faces at the girls anymore. So being good little boys like we were, we didn't look in the windows anymore. The next thing we did, we got an old cat and we turpentined the cat. And then we raised the window up just a little bit and we pushed the cat inside. Immediately the girls recognized the cat, and as it takes a few minutes for the turpentine to take effect and start hurting the cats behind, well, the girls petted the cats, but they didn't want to put the cat outside, because if they opened the door, maybe we'd dash inside. So they kept the cat inside with him, and they was petting him, and suddenly the old cat started going meow, and then he got right out in the middle of the basketball floor, and he'd scoot up and down the middle of the floor on his hind end. And the girls were trying to quiet him down. And finally, the guy that was in charge of the dance hall, he managed to get hold of the cat. By this time, the cat was scratching anybody that got too close to him. But the guard that was, or the priesthood member that was with the girls watching practice, he succeeded in getting hold of the old cat with his gloves. He took him and put him out the front door. Well, the next Sunday, well, Brother David Owen Chapman, who was the bishop at that time, got up at priesthood meeting, and he said, I want to meet with Brother Amos Jr. Titchen and Golden Young and Ralph Lancaster. And he went on and named all the Aaronic priesthood boys that had been in this little group that turpentined the cat. He said, I want to meet you kids after priesthood meeting, and I want your parents to be there with us. Well, Ralph Lancaster's mother was a Mormon, but his father was never necessarily a Mormon. He accepted the Mormonism, but he had never been baptized. And George Lancaster announced that no damn bishop was going to try his boy, and he wasn't going to let Ralph be there for the bishop's court. But Ralph found out that all the rest of the boys were going to be there with their parents. And so finally, George Lancaster consented that he'd go with Ralph Lancaster's.